Since November of 1987, Kevin Williams has had a heavy interest in radio. Now, Kevin is living his dream. Welcome to the Canning Plus 7 podcast.
One young lady had dehydration, another one had fallen and hurt her knee pretty bad, and she had to be sent home. But, you know, otherwise, if it wasn't for ham radio, she would have had to wait 3 hours before anybody can come along and take her back home.
Welcome once again to the Canning Plus 7 podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Williams, the Blind Montana Man, podcasting to you from Billings, Montana. Today was part two of our discussion that we had last week with Noji Ragslap. I got so many comments. Oh, why didn't you get into this further? Okay, so we did. We talked about how to set up a ham radio, grounding your antenna. If you set up your ham radio correctly, part of that is grounding your antenna so that it doesn't get struck by lightning and mess up your radio. Because if that antenna is hit by lightning and it's not grounded correctly, you might as well kiss your radio goodbye. So we talked about that. How to get millennials, Generation Z, interested in the hobby. And we talked about a really cool experience that Noji had doing crossbanding, which means that you can transmit and receive on two different frequencies. By the way, if you have a comment or a suggestion, maybe there's a guest that you want me to have on the Canning Plus 7 podcast, all you need to do is email me. Canning, C-A-N-N-I-N-G, plus 7. That's C-A-N-N-I-N-G, P-L-U-S, 7, at protonmail.com. That's Canning, C-A-N-N-I-N-G, plus the number 7, at protonmail.com. You can also like the Facebook page at Canning plus 7. That's C-A-N-N-I-N-G, the plus sign, and then 7. So go ahead and do that. Also, next week, I'm going to try and get a guest on that knows about permaculture. Or I may just research it myself and give my own commentary on permaculture, for that matter. Let's enjoy the show, and let's get to Noji Part 2. Here we go. It is Thursday, January 20th, 2022. I'm Kevin Williams, the Blind Montana Man, podcasting to you from Billings, Montana. We're going to continue the podcast that we did last Thursday here on the Canning Plus 7 podcast with Noji Ragslap. How are you tonight, Noji?
Couldn't be better. Things are going well.
Good
health. Enjoying it.
I got a lot of feedback. A lot of people liked the conversation that we had, and they said, why don't you get more into the technical aspect? Well, I don't want to get too technical. We are going to get a little bit more technical tonight because you asked for it. We're not going to bore you to tears, but we're going to talk about something that I thought was really neat that you did, and we touched on it last week about the Pioneer Trek for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But before we get there, how, and I know this will be a loaded question, but how do you set up a ham radio station in your house?
Well, there's a couple different things you can do. Ham radio station could be as simple as a little handheld thing that looks like a walkie-talkie.
Yes.
Or as elaborate as a mobile unit, you know, sitting on the desk there with the power supply.
Yes, in fact, let me say something to that real quick. I was at a ham radio banquet last week. Last week on Saturday night. Somebody had a Yaesu. I can't remember the model number. He was showing me this wire. I think it was Wise X. Have you heard of that? It's a digital.
Yeah, Wires X.
Wires, yes. X, yeah.
Right, I've done that before.
And, maybe we'll get into that then. Wires X and his radio, it was a Yaesu, it looked almost exactly like an old cell phone.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me very much of it reminded me very much of the cell phone that my dad had back in 1992. With the rubber duck antenna and everything. So you can buy a radio, like you said, a mobile unit hooked up to a power supply. I'd imagine they have a base unit too, don't they? That plugs into your 120 volt socket.
Well, most of them don't plug into those. They plug into a power supply just like the mobile unit to do.
Okay.
So there's none today that will plug into your wall.
Oh, okay. And which one is that?
Which one is what?
Which one is the one that will plug into your wall? Do you know?
I said there's none today that will plug into your wall.
Okay.
They don't do that anymore.
Okay. Well, that's fine. As long as you have a power supply. Okay. So now how do you build a tower and you put it on your tower, the antenna, and then how do you make it so that lightning does not strike your radio, go from your antenna to your radio?
Well, first of all, you've made a big jump there from a little inside radio to a tower. That's a huge leap there, but mostly people will start with an antenna that's on their roof. It's much easier to put up. It's less costly, and it can get very, very far too. So that's where I would actually start with people. Even those antennas on your roof can still be struck by lightning, and it can really be hazardous to your radio and to your house and your cat and so forth if you're not careful. But the right way to handle static discharge and lightning like that is by grounding your antenna properly. And grounding a ham radio station is a kind of a religion all in itself, but it requires a little bit of knowledge, and I can show anybody how to do that. So your mast that holds up your antenna needs to be grounded by a good solid piece of wire that goes from that mast down, tied to a ground rod below it that's driven into the dirt. And then the coax that goes from the antenna needs to go through some people call it a lightning arrestor, but it's actually a static discharge unit. And the discharge unit will simply bleed off the static that comes from the antenna to ground. So your coax would go through this little unit, and that will be also bonded and connected to that ground rod that's on your in the dirt. The other side of your coax would then go from there to your house in your room. That way, if lightning does hit you, it'll either go to the hit the mast and go to the ground, or it'll go and hit your coax and it'll hit the ground instead of going to your radio.
Okay, so you can talk. So if you have it grounded properly, then, and there's a reason I'm asking this, if you have it all grounded properly, that is your radio and your antenna, you can talk all you want to with the lightning striking, correct? It's a guarantee it's not going to hit your radio?
Well, not a guarantee, but there's a lot of things you can do. First of all, you don't want to ground your radio. You want to ground your antenna, and you want to ground those things that are AC coupled. Your radio does not need to be grounded because it doesn't have any AC coupling, and grounding it will actually cause problems known as ground looping. Excuse me. And you want to avoid ground looping because those make a kind of a buzzing sound and people can hear it and so forth. So you don't want to do that. Grounding your like your power supply because it's AC connected, or your amplifier if you have one, and things like that. Those must be grounded, and that'll prevent shock, and any static discharge that comes through your antenna and so forth won't reach your radio. It'll instead be shunted over to ground.
Okay, so I want to tell you a personal story and ask you a question, and then we'll get on to a really neat topic here.
Okay.
I had a CB radio, and I knew absolutely nothing about grounding an antenna. And I don't know if my dad did either. Now, my dad may have known. He just neglected to ground the antenna. Or he just didn't know, because my dad was an electrical engineer, so I suspect he would have known something about it. But keep in mind, this is back in the winter, Christmas Day of 1991. The last thing that was on any of our minds was lightning. It was snowing. Mm-hmm. Well, there was snow on the ground, and we went on top of the roof and drilled a hole. I can't remember where. It was near the chimney, and we put the antenna there. And several months later, a lightning storm hit. No, it did not mess up my radio, but my dad said, you might want to unplug your radio next time because the lightning can hit your radio and really mess it up. And one time, it was probably about 2 or 3 in the morning, there was a lightning storm in the summer of 92, and my dad came in and unplugged my radio real quick. And he said, it's a good thing I unplugged your radio because there were sparks coming down the coax. Now, is that dangerous? If you were to touch the coax while you unplugged the coax and sparks were coming down, would you get killed? Was my dad lucky that he didn't get struck by lightning through the coax, or what goes on there?
Oh no, I've handled coax many times that had sparks coming out of it because of overhead lightning and so forth. I mean, you know, honestly and truly, if you got a real lightning strike that directly hits you, you know, well, you could say your goodbye to your radio, your house, your hand, anything that's nearby. But chances are you're just going to get static discharge buildup and not a direct strike. And that's kind of what he was experiencing and what I've experienced many times. And it is a good idea to disconnect your coax from your radio if you do not have a proper ground. But if you have a proper ground, like I just described to you, there's no need to disconnect your radio.
Yeah, we actually put the antenna in the attic. And because of our location in where we were in Boise and living in the foothills, and there was no stucco on our house, it actually did pretty well. We didn't lose anything by putting it up in the attic.
Good, good.
So I would imagine you could do that. All right, so let's get on to the main topic for tonight. I just thought it'd be good for people to learn how to set up a radio. Oh, one more question, though.
Yeah.
More and more people are getting into neighborhoods and subdivisions and townhouses where they do not allow the antenna on the roof. How do you remedy such a thing? And how would you ground an antenna in a case like that?
That won't allow antennas because of HOA rules or CCNRs, you know, the covenant code and restrictions or whatever they call them.
Yes.
And that's fine. So, you know, you want to be good citizens and abide by those things. But so there are ways to get around it because part of being an amateur is to, you know, learn how to deal with antennas and issues and how to get around problems like that and to be creative. And I could show people many ways of how to get around issues to with small spaces or apartment complexes or rules like that. And honestly and truly, most HOA people, the presidents and the boards and so forth, don't really care that much about you having your antenna up, especially if they allow TV antennas and other kinds. And so oftentimes you'll simply just go ahead and put one up that's not very sightly or, you know, intrusive, and chances are you'll be okay. If you were to go to ask the HOA people about the antenna and get their permission, I guarantee they'll always say no, because that's what they do. They have to say no. That's just what they're obligated to do now, but they don't want you to ask. They just want you to do the antenna and be done with it. However, there are many HOAs that really don't want you to have an antenna up. And if they don't, they'll ask you to take it down. And if you want you to take it down, you'll be a good citizen and away you go. And then there's still things you can do to set up a good antenna without being sightly. For instance, you can set up a flagpole in your yard, and on top of that flagpole is an antenna, and you can have a coax going from that antenna into your house. Another way of doing, like HF, for instance, is to have a long wire that goes around the perimeter of your roof on your roof. That's only about like 6 inches over, you know, over your roof by standoffs all around your roof. That's really easy to do, but it's, you know, and it's very out of the sight, so no one can see it at all. Another way is to put an antenna in your roof, like you're talking about. That's often not recommended, just because many houses have stucco, and stucco is a shield and a barrier against radio signals. And then there are so many other things you can do too. You can put an antenna on the side of your house, keep it out of sight of people going by. You can put one in the backyard or back on your house, but, you know, in the back, so it's away from the street. There are many things that you can do.
Okay, very good. All right, so let's talk about something that I think is really neat. How do you get millennials into ham radio? We're going to get to your story. We're going to bridge into this, but in your opinion, how do you think we can get millennials and the Generation Zs and I don't know what they're called now, Generation Zs, ham radio, or millennials. How do you get that crowd into ham radio?
Well, you know, I don't really give them a lot of labels and such. They're just people like we are, you know, but they are younger. they have a different mindset, and then they grew up with a different kind of technology than we did. And the thing is to appreciate their love of technology, just like we had ours. Mm-hmm. And once you appreciate what they can do with, you know, their technology and what they know, you can actually, you know, get them involved with radio and so forth on their level and be, you know, and they'll be just as happy and such. For instance, one thing you can do is get them involved with Raspberry Pi or Arduinos. And with those, you can actually, you know, set up your own like radio repeater, your a station of some sort. And it's a very technical thing to do. But if they're interested in getting that deeply, those young people can really get involved in the electronics to do radio that way. And just by doing that, they can talk to people around the world. By the same token, they can get into what we call an SDR, which is a software-defined radio. And it's just a little thing. You can build that yourself or even buy ready-made from, you know, Amazon or whatever. And these SDRs, again, just plug into your USB port. And you're talking to people all over the world without even going through the internet. Just set up a little antenna, and then suddenly you're doing really crazy things. And another thing too is like they can set up a digital network. So a lot of these younger folks don't want to talk on the traditional ways of speaking like you and I have done, where we're just using voice to talk to someone across the world. It's like, well, that's fun, but that's good for like 5 minutes, you know, because we can do it. Mm-hmm. But these younger people tend to get more into digital things. And in ham radio, there's so much digital technology that's available that they can get into. So they can combine all of that stuff to build their own or get into digital and experiment with different kinds of modes, as we call them, the digital signatures and how to transmit things through digital. They can send, you know, photographs and videos and all kinds of things on amateur radio to people across the world without going through the internet and without going through, you know, any infrastructure here on the ground. So that's kind of a cool thing.
Now, what's the name of this that you plug it into the USB port of your radio, I assume?
No, in your computer.
Oh.
And because it uses your computer's sound card. And that's called an SDR, a software-defined radio.
I'd never heard of that.
Yeah, you just plug that thing in, and then using the sound, you know, your microphone on your computer, you can talk to that thing, and then it can be connected to your antenna, and they can transmit, you know, your voice or you know, through a digital, but it digitizes your voice, changes it to VoIP, which is voice over internet, internet protocol, and then it'll send that along its way on a digital network.
Oh, wow. Okay. So could you be on a frequency like 145.45 and with this piece of equipment into your computer, could you talk on that?
Well, not exactly. You can use it on, you know, local frequencies. It's just the frequency you just now mentioned is dedicated to a repeater. So you can't actually interfere with the repeater that's existing or the repeater frequencies. And to know which frequency you need to use or can use, you have to go to what's known as a band plan. Every state has a different band plan. You go there and you can see which frequencies used to digital, which frequencies are used for repeaters, which ones for simplex, and on and on. Once you consult with that, then you can find out exactly which frequency you can use.
Oh, wow. That's really neat. I'm thinking kind of along the lines of you. You know, the younger people think, oh, well, we don't need ham radio. We have the internet. We have cell phones. And as we talked about, we're not going to repeat this whole discussion again tonight because we already did last week. You know, the cell phone towers go down. Internet can go down. But the one thing that I believe that we can do to get younger people into ham radio is, like you said, introduce them to Raspberry Pi. I have a friend, for example, in northern Utah. He has Raspberry Pi, and he has a Bofeng hooked onto his Raspberry Pi. I think he has, he has his Raspberry Pi in a cupboard and set to a frequency, and then he has his Bofeng connected to the Raspberry Pi on a simplex frequency. And with that, it's an all-star node, so he can tap into his all-star node and then go into any all-star node that he wants to. Or I think the all-star node is there when he's on the simplex frequency. with a different radio, and I think he hits pound and whatever the all-star node number is, and he's able to talk to that all-star node, which might be clear around the world. Now someone might say, well, Kevin, people are already doing that on the internet with Skype. Well, okay, but let's get a scenario going here. Let's suppose there's an earthquake, because we know that, well, we don't even have to talk about the earthquake. The volcano in Tonga, okay, that erupted. I understand there's no internet, there's no power. But once you get that power on, you can actually find an all-star node in Tonga. Let's hope it's up. And dial into that and ask if everyone's okay. You don't have to get out there on Facebook with a Tongan group or whoever and find out. You can talk to the source on the ground once the power's up. There's also another technology, though, that you had mentioned off the podcast called Nesh. Go ahead and explain how that works, because I understand somebody in Tonga could probably connect to the internet through that right now, correct?
Well, okay, first of all, let's go back to the other thing you mentioned about your All-Star Net and so forth.
Yeah.
So with that, you know, let's say that person tried to connect to some All-Star repeater or net and there was none. He can create his own. So he can set up his own All-Star Net if he wanted to. Repeater, everything from the ground up. And you mentioned when the power comes up, he can do that with a battery. So there's no need to wait for the power to come up. And if he's got solar, which, as I understand it, in Tonga, they got a lot of sunshine. So with a couple of solar panels and everything, you're set to go with all the power you want. And you can do that. And then what, now that you're mentioning the mesh network, so a person can actually set up a local intranet using mesh network. And that way, that allows people within that mesh network locally to communicate to each other through the internet with the local internet. If the real internet starts to coming back up, that mesh network can connect into the real internet and then connect the local people who have no internet service into the real internet. And suddenly the local people then have like a magical AM radio hotspot, if you will, to the real internet through your mesh network. And of course, you know, once it comes back, you know, online locally, well, then you don't need that mesh network anymore. And you just go on the real network.
Okay, but let's just get back to All-Star real quick.
Okay.
If the internet is down in Tonga, would the All-Star nodes in Tonga not work? Because they are don't they have to go through the internet?
Well, okay, so if there are no other All-Star nodes to talk to, then yeah, the person's just talking to himself, you know. But the thing is that if there are other, I mean, you know, I guess I need to ask, why did you mention All-Star if you know that it's dependent on the internet?
Well, I guess because somebody actually told me that during the earthquake in Salt Lake, somebody actually got into a DMR group and asked, is everybody okay? Is this building still intact? Is this building still intact? And I was thinking about that. And then I guess I just used Tonga because that's the current example that everybody can relate to right now.
Well, but the thing is that All-Star requires internet. DMR does not.
Okay. So you can actually get into a DMR group right now in Tonga and talk.
That's right, if they had a DMR hotspot or repeater. And you can set one up yourself. So one of these young folks who are looking for some technical thing to do, you know, some geeky thing to nerd out on, that's the perfect thing that they can do, set up a network just like that, and everybody around can get on there. And, you know, as long as they have a radio that's capable of DMR, and then suddenly they're talking and they're communicating and getting help and the aid they need.
Oh, I thought all the DMR groups had to be connected through the internet somehow.
Yeah, they don't have to be.
Oh, okay.
They do have to be talking through a talk group, which you can set up in local talk groups or wide area talk groups, however the wide the radio can reach or your hotspot can reach or your repeater can reach.
Okay. Well, let's talk about a story that, well, I guess an experience that you had. Now, I don't know what year this was, but I guess we did briefly touch on this last week, but I want to get more into that. This week, you did a Pioneer Trek. Now, for those of you that are not members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, some wards, which are a geographical area that you're assigned to, so there could be the Orem Ward or whatever, and people who live in a specific geographical area go to that ward. And then there's stakes, which represents a bigger geographical area, but within those stakes, there's a ward. But your stake had a Pioneer Trek, and you were on the communications committee, and I assume that you actually probably went on this trek before everybody else to assess the communication issues, correct?
Well, yes and no. So yes, my wife and I actually did go out there. And so, yeah, we did kind of survey the place to figure out how things will work, you know, and so forth. So we did do that out in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But and so that's where you came up with this idea where you created a repeater. You were using a Yaesu F28800R, as in Romeo. And you did what's called crossband. Basically, what crossband is, this particular radio, I guess, has the ability to act like a repeater. And what the crossband is you transmit and receive on different frequencies. So I could be transmitting on one frequency, somebody could receive on the other frequency, and somehow we're able to talk to each other. And you actually, we're going to get a little technical, but that's okay. You actually had to have approval to use these frequencies. You were on 70 centimeters and 2 meters, and you actually had to get approval from the frequency coordinator to use these frequencies. And you actually had to go to the Utah VHF Society, and there's other websites where you can go to find out the repeater frequencies in your area. I assume that you had to make sure that the two frequencies that you were using were not occupied by a repeater already, correct?
That's right. But this is Wyoming, so we had to go to their frequency coordinator and do the same thing, essentially. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you went to the Wyoming frequency coordinator, and you just, by the way, the frequencies were 147.220.
Yeah.
On 2 meters, and then on the 70 centimeter band, it was 447.650.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, okay. And so you had to go to the Wyoming coordinator and do all the, you know, you had to get permission. How long did that take you? Because I'd imagine there was a little bit of red tape in that, and rightfully so, I would add.
Yeah. It just took a day. I emailed him, he emailed me back, and he says, yeah, you could use this.
Okay. And so what you did is you set it up, and if you're going to do this, you need a battery, a microphone, a stereo cable, one with 2.5 millimeter end and 3.5 millimeter, and the stereo cable needs to be 12 feet long, ideally, although I know yours was 9 feet long, but it worked according to what I read here. And you know,
well, this
you
setup did not require the stereo cable.
What's that?
This setup did not require any cable like that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It was just radio, antenna, battery, and microphone. That's it.
Okay, because I noticed on the article that you sent me, it did mention something about a stereo cable.
And that's for a Belfang type of a repeater.
Okay. Okay. And you want to make sure... And this makes sense because sometimes it gets really hot out in the desert there, even in Wyoming in the summer. And believe me, I've had my radio in the sun and it does not behave very well in the sun. So you want to make sure if you're going to do this, you have a canopy and a table or a tent, correct? Because you don't want your radio to get hot.
You should, yeah. I put mine in a shower tent, which is really, you know, inexpensive. I got from Costco, and I just set it up there and put a couple of rocks in the bottom so it wouldn't blow away. I had a little wooden table that I used in there, a fold-up table that I also got from Costco. And put it in there, set up the radio and battery, and away it went.
Okay. Now, to do this, you had, and sorry, folks, we're going to get a little technical, but if you really want to know more about what we're talking about, you can email Noji. I'll give out his email address, and there's a link in the show notes. But you also set the tone because you had, well, let's go back though. You had to set your radios to simplex, both on both frequencies, correct? That's the impression I was under.
So we had to use repeater frequencies because it's a repeater, and yet we had to set the radio to simplex because that's what, how we were transmitting and receiving. And we had to instruct the users of those frequencies to also use simplex.
Okay, now let me just stop right here and let me explain the difference between what a repeater is and simplex. Simplex is talking from radio to radio. In fact, HF, also known as high frequency, or if you've ever talked on a CB before, maybe even a GMRS radio, maybe in the family radio band. Those are mostly using simplex. Let's say you buy an FRS radio, family service radio, which were very popular 20 years ago.
So you're talking about the bubble wrap walkie-talkies?
Yes. Or, well, I even saw something more complicated than that 20 years ago.
Well, I think that's the term that people kind of can relate to.
Oh, okay. Because I saw one. It was in the family service radio band. You could actually page the other radio.
Sure.
And it vibrated. But the point is, most likely,
your radio service is.
Yeah. Most likely, you were using simplex. Simplex is just talking from radio to radio. Repeater is the term we're going to use tonight. Well, we're going to use both simplex and repeater. But a repeater typically is something where that is high up on the mountaintop or up in the hills, depending on where you live. And you can talk more than 15 miles. Simplex, if you have a good radio, you can probably talk about 15, 20 miles on 2 meters, 70 centimeters. If you have a repeater, though, you can talk, depending on how high the repeater is, you can talk for about 200 or 300 miles, can't you? Depending on how high that repeater is on the mountain.
Yep, you can do pretty good.
In fact, for those of you that know the Utah geography, there's actually a guy that lives in Tremont in Utah, which is high up at the top of Utah. Not completely, but it's pretty far north. And he talks clear down to Orem and Provo, Utah. You probably know him. So that's probably what, just to put it into perspective, Provo and Orem is probably about, what, a 2.5 hour drive from Tremont?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe even more. So this guy, since the repeater is so high up on the mountaintop, and he probably has a very big tower. I don't know his setup, but he probably has his antenna on the roof or a tower. And he also is, and that's how he's able to get out. So that's the difference between simplex and a repeater. But you put both of your radios on simplex. Now, why did you do that when one of the radios was set to act as a repeater? I was a little confused why you had both of them on simplex then.
Well, simplex, just so they can talk directly into the radio at that one frequency, and they can hear back on that same frequency. That's what simplex means, that you're transmitting and receiving on the same frequency.
Okay. Okay. And so let me ask you a question, though. So obviously, these were people at the Trek that knew nothing about ham radio. Were they allowed to talk? Youth? What's that?
These are just ham radio operators who were on the Trek.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But the people at the beginning of the Trek and the people at the end could not talk to each other through ham radio because they were too far away and there was a hill in the way.
Yeah. And that's where you put up this repeater.
That's right.
And did the cross. Okay. And you set a PL tone of 100. Now, the PL tone makes it, I don't know exactly what PL stands for, but I know the PL tone makes it so that, my understanding is, if there's another repeater on that frequency, it doesn't interfere with another repeater, correct?
Yeah, we don't call it a PL tone anymore because it's a copyrighted name. We call it a CTCSS tone. So just to keep everything simple, we just simply call it a tone. And we set that to prevent interference and, chances of us interfering with other repeaters or them repeat, you know, interfering with ours. But yeah, we set a tone. But the people who are using their handhelds, they don't have to set a tone.
Yeah. Okay. Now, obviously, this was effective because your state president, the guy who's over the state that's underneath, you know, then that state president has bishops of wards underneath him. Obviously, he was impressed. Do you want to elaborate on more on how that was a good experience for you?
Well, a good experience for me, just because I felt like I was of service to people. Because once I saw the problem that was going on, which was that people at the end and people at the beginning couldn't speak to each other regarding, you know, coordination of food and lodging tents, you know, injuries. There were several injuries. One young lady had dehydration. Another one had fallen and hurt her knee pretty bad, and she had to be sent home. But, you know, otherwise, if it wasn't for ham radio, she would have had to wait 3 hours before anybody can come along and take her back home. And just to get on the bus or take the car or truck. But because of the radio we set up, messages were sent instantly. And so we were able to get things done quite a lot faster. And then when the state president, of course, saw this going on, that we had accomplished so much with, you know, so little time because of, you know, the radio being set up like that, the repeater being set up, he just came over and asked, you know, so tell me again how this works. And he was just super impressed that it was doing this and saving people's lives, if you will, and just a lot of time and a lot of preparation that otherwise would have taken a long time.
So let me ask you this, since obviously young people were on the Pioneer Trek, I should probably explain to you what a Pioneer Trek is, not you, Noji, but you, the listener, because we have all kinds of listeners out there. A Pioneer Trek is something that, well, let me just go back into the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints history. The members of the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints were driven out from Nauvoo, Illinois, and it was decided that we would go west and eventually ended up in Salt Lake. So the idea of the trek is to emulate as much as possible what it would have been like for those pioneers. Obviously, with the ham radio and the communications, it's modified a little bit, but we try to make it as close as possible to what it was. Matter of fact, I understand if you're really, truly going to take this trek, you are not allowed to have cell phones. You are not allowed to have CD players, or MP3 players, iPhones, iPads, whatever, correct?
Well, the leaders had cell phones in case there were any towers, and it turns out they were pretty useless anyway. But yeah, we were all required to wear period costume.
Uh-huh. Okay. So I want to get that out of there. But my point is, do you think that your state president now is interested in getting a ham radio? Do you think you planted a seed? And since there were younger people on this trek, youth, do you think they now might be interested and might want to get into ham radio?
Oh, I don't know. There were a few that saw what was going on and they saw the value. But, you know, that day came and went, and they just kind of went, oh, that's cool. Glad you solved that problem. Next, you know. So the interest didn't last very long.
Huh. Okay. What about your state president? Do you think you planted a seed for him to get into ham radio if happens to be a major emergency or major chaos going on?
Well, he never did get his license, but he was interested. And he encouraged other people in the stake to get licensed. And so now our stake probably has more ham radio licensees than probably any stake in Orem.
So in other words, you did plant a seed.
Absolutely.
Maybe not to the extent of what you wanted or I would have wanted, but you certainly got people talking, it sounds like.
Well, and it wasn't just me. I mean, you know, there's other people who demonstrated the radio and explained how things work. And I think they all contributed.
Okay. Well, so these are ways that I think we can get the younger generation into ham radio. Noji brought some good ideas to the table tonight. We went over first how to set up your ham radio station, ground your antenna, how to get people interested, particularly the youth and the young adults. And we went over Noji's story. Is there anything else you want to cover, though?
No, if you if you do want to get licensed, it does require an exam.
Yes.
And the exam has 35 questions, 26 you got to get right to pass, and they're not all that hard.
No, they're not. In fact, let me tell you a secret. The questions and the answers are on the internet. That's how I got mine.
Yeah, they're all published.
Yeah, so it's not that hard. Now, the general is a little harder and the extra is a little harder. Just think of it this way, folks. For those of us that were into CB radio, I don't know if you were ever into CB, Noji, but I had a CB radio.
Oh, yeah, I still do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yep, I've got a Cobra 75 and a
Cobra
19.
Do you talk on it much?
What's that?
Do you talk on it much?
Oh, no, but when there's a storm coming about, or big traffic incident, that I'll listen in to listen to what the truckers have to say and so forth. And even then, usually it's kind of quiet.
Okay. But the point is, let me just picture the CB radio as high school. Picture your general license as an associate degree. Picture your CB radio as high school, technician license as an associate degree, general license as a bachelor's degree, and your technician as a master's. Don't you think that's your extra as a master's? Is that a pretty good comparison?
Yeah, it's kind of good. Yeah, you bet.
Okay. So you've got the CB radio like you're in high school in terms of running two-way radio communications. Then you have your technician, which is equivalent to an associate's degree in the world of amateur radio. Your general, which is like a bachelor's degree, and your extra, like a master's degree. And by the way, the more you advanced in the ham radio, the harder the questions are. It's not impossible, but just know if you get your general, you have to study quite a bit harder. Don't you think, Noji? At least I don't have a general, but I was working on it at one point. Then something came up, but I had to work a lot harder. Isn't that a pretty good estimation?
Yeah, it's a little harder, you bet.
Yeah, but you can do it.
Yes.
All right, folks. Hopefully we'll be doing another podcast this coming week. I want to get into permaculture and those type of things, but I suppose, Noji, you don't have anything else to say, or do you?
Oh, I always have a lot to say, but tonight I think that'll cover it.
All right. Well, thanks very much, and I will talk to you later, folks.
Thank you for listening to the Canning Plus 7 podcast. If you have a comment or suggestion, email Kevin Williams at canningplus7@protonmail.com. Remember, when emailing him, the plus is spelled out instead of the plus sign. You can also check him out on Facebook at Canning Plus 7. That's Canning Plus 7 with the plus symbol instead of the word plus on the Canning Plus 7 Facebook page.